Are you a Catholic woman who loves your faith, but finds certain aspects of living it out challenging and confusing? Are you a Catholic wife striving for a healthy, holy marriage and sex life, but don't know where to turn for straightforward, faithful, nitty-gritty answers to some of your deep and delicate questions? Are you a Catholic mom who's tired of the compare and despair game we all fall victim to on social media, and are just in need of some solidarity as you discover your own unique motherhood? Are you tired of the sunshine and rainbows pitch? Want to lean into the both and of the mess that happens when the truths of our faith get lived in a fallen world? Well, if that's where you find yourself, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Emily Frazee, your host of the Total Wine Podcast. I'm here to dig deep and tackle topics that we are all curious about, but maybe too afraid to ask. I'll answer it all with honesty and humor, because living the faithful life can make you either laugh or cry, and well, laughing burns more calories. Welcome to the show. Welcome to another episode of the Total Wine Podcast. This is an interesting episode. This episode today is brought to you by the Instagram post that I started planning in my head after having a conversation with a friend yesterday, which then turned into a Substack post, and then I realized I do not have the time to write and edit anymore, or at this point in time. And so here I am recording a podcast episode that I am hopefully going to turn into something coherent by the time I'm done. This bodes well, right? All right, everybody buckle up. We don't know what's happening. So the conversation that I had with a friend yesterday, I'm going to try to be as vague as possible because I'm just going to keep it vague. She had reached out, or she was in a conversation with a Catholic man, someone I would consider to be a very good man, and she was bringing up the fact that, you know, there needs to be women's voices talking about the women's experience of sex. Basically, like, men have done a great job of kind of highlighting, you know, obviously John Paul II with theology of the body, creating this entire anthropology of the human person. And then Christopher West has kind of focused on the implications of this anthropology, particularly in the sexual sphere, right? But pretty much, like, the conversation about this is, and I don't say this in a bad way, male dominated. And we're kind of at a point where we're recognizing that, like, hey, we need, like, you guys have done a great job. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your contribution. But we need some women adding into this as well, because sure, men can absolutely, they can talk about the man's experience of sex, and they can call men and be like, hey, women are different. Men can call other men to get to know their wives and to understand that they are different, and you're going to have to go outside of yourself in order to love her in the way that she was created to be loved. Like, yeah, guys, get after it, do it. And they are doing it, and they're doing a wonderful job, I think. But they're doing it without that piece of the woman's experience, of women having kind of the same types of platforms speaking about their sexual experience. So she was in conversations with this Catholic man, and, you know, she was basically making this point. And one of the first things that he said back to her was just like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, we guys, we've got this covered. Like, we are having these conversations, so don't you worry. And it was just like, literally, she's trying to tell him that there needs to be women's voices. And his response back is, oh, the men have this covered. And it's just like, oh, dude, what did we miss? How do we miss this? Anyway, like, it was just kind of one of those David Rose moments of like, I've never heard so many wrong things one after the other consecutively in a row. And again, a good Catholic man, but just like, right over his head. So my friend and I are in this conversation. We're just like banging our heads against the wall. And I told her, I was like, whenever I feel particularly feminist, as stuff like this kind of turn, like, I turn into like a little bit of a raging feminist, I'm not going to lie. And I always kind of go back to, I pull out my biography of Catherine of Siena by Sigrid Undset. Excellent book. Highly recommend it. It's incredible. Catherine of Siena, like, there's certainly some things that if you looked at her life in light of kind of modern understanding of psychology, there's certainly, like, there's certain aspects of her life that, like, would not be, I would not recommend emulating. Like, her relationship with food was very strange. But at the end of the day, like, the reason why people aren't saints is because they didn't have, the reason why people are saints is not because they didn't have struggles. It's because they didn't have, let those struggles have the last word. And so, you know, we can take the entire person with all of their flaws and all of the beautiful things, all of the beautiful qualities, just the fullness of their humanity. And it doesn't detract from the good things that they did and the incredible witness of their life. But I love Catherine of Siena for multiple reasons. So I'm gonna take this story, this conversation that I had with my friend about this conversation with a Catholic man, and I'm gonna pivot it because I want to go after the trad bros. I've been itching to go after the trad bros, the red-pilled Catholic alpha males who are out there just, I don't know if they, like, sat down and they did, like, shrooms or acid and then just started misquoting scripture. But it's everywhere now, and it's very troubling. So I just want the opportunity to go after the trad bros today. But I want to start with this conversation that Catherine of Siena had with Jesus. It's very early in this biography written by Sigrid Undset. You might recognize the author if you've ever heard of the series Kristen Lavrin's Daughter. I know a lot of people have read that series and loved it. It's the same author who wrote this biography of Catherine of Siena. And this was also, just to kind of, like, connect the dots, women's brains are just big balls of wire, right? Like, we think about one thing and it connects to all these other things, and it's like, okay, here are all of these things. And sometimes I realize that I forget to connect those dots. I forget to connect those wires verbally for other people. And it's like, oh, yeah. So in addition to this conversation with a friend that I had yesterday, I went and lurked on Timothy Gordon's Twitter page, or X page, or whatever the heck we're calling it now. And I don't know if you know who Timothy Gordon is, but his own biography on Twitter, X, whatever, is that he's the godfather of, like, the revival of the patriarchy. Of the Catholic patriarchy. So that gives you a vibe if you're not familiar with who he is. Yeah. So I kind of encountered him more when his wife came out with a book called Ask Your Husband, published by Tan. I don't know if you remember this or seeing this book, but it got pulled off the shelves because apparently Timothy's brother said that it was plagiarized. And if you're unfamiliar with this story, it basically reads like the Catholic Kardashians. So if you want just a little taste of drama, you want to lurk on some drama, I highly recommend that you Google this story. Don't read the book, but Google the story for your own amusement. But as I was reading this, like, I always come back to this quote from Catherine of Siena. Okay, so we're connecting the dots now. This is early in the book. And it's a conversation that Catherine has with Jesus. Now, for those of you who don't know, Catherine of Siena, later in her life, she died very young at the age of 33, but later in her life, she was an advisor to the Pope. There was literally a point where the Pope would not make a move unless he had first consulted Catherine of Siena. Now, where I find this particularly ironic is that these Catholic alpha males, who, of course, where I run into them the most is they think that NFP is a sin. And one of the examples that they use is that if Catherine of Siena's parents used NFP, they never would have had her because she was their 25th child. So now I'm going to use her against them. Let's go. Okay, so Catherine was a mystic. She had regular conversations with Christ. And in one conversation, Christ is asking her to basically step into the role that she would eventually take on to be advisor of the Pope. But, you know, things like that start small. And he tells her to go and seat yourself at the table with your family, talk to them kindly, and then come back here. When Catherine heard these words, she began to weep She was so completely unprepared to leave her cell and her life of contemplation mixed again with people in the world, but our Lord was firm. And she comes back to him and she says, "But how can I be of any use in the work of saving souls? I, who am merely your poor servant girl, for I am a woman, and it is not seemly for my sex to try to teach men or even speak with them." This is my favorite part. "Besides, they take no notice of what we say." But Jesus replied as the archangel Gabriel had once replied, "All things are possible for God who has created everything from nothing. I know that you say this from humility, but you must know that in these days, pride has grown monstrously among men, and chiefly among those who are learned and think they understand everything. It was for this reason that at another period I sent out simple men who had no human learning, but were filled by me with divine wisdom, and let them preach. Today I have chosen unschooled women, fearful and weak by nature, but trained by me in the knowledge of the divine, so that they may put vanity and pride to shame. If men will humbly receive the teachings I send them through the weaker sex, I will show them great mercy. But if they despise these women, they shall fall into even worse confusion and even greater agony. Therefore, my dear daughter, you shall humbly do my will, for I will never fail you. On the contrary, I will come to you as often as before, and I will guide and help you in all things." I don't know that these trad bros are aware of this conversation, but I really, like, part of me, like, just wants to be super petty and just tweet at Timothy Gordon and some of these other guys out there who just, the language that they use is so denigrating of women. It is so denigrating of women. "Oh, you little women." And it was a little, like, just a little taste of that in the conversation that my friend had with this other man. Now, he's definitely not a trad bro. Like I said, he's a very good man. But, like, just this little, just, oh, like, "Oh, you woman, no, we men have it covered." It just boggles my mind that we have gotten to this point where men, a particular brand of men, are driving a conversation where women are really, when you play this out, when you play out the things that they talk about, that, you know, if you look at Timothy Gordon's page, he literally says that an alpha male's wife obeys him and doesn't ever talk back. I'm like, what did you marry? Did you marry a person or did you marry a machine? You know, like, how can you be a Catholic? How can you be a Christian? How can you say that the institution of marriage is sacred, which he does. He talks about the sacredness of the institution of marriage, but then believe that you marry somebody who is essentially subhuman in the way that you describe her and the way that you say, you publicly discuss that you treat her. These things do not line up. They don't make sense. And on the one hand, you know, we're living in times where we are living in between pendulum swings, it feels like, on so many different topics. You know, on the one hand, you know, secular hedonism and, you know, "I think therefore I am," whatever, like the Nietzschean, Machiavellian hedonism that is out in the world, not good, not great. Yeah, it causes a lot of destruction. There's a lot of horrible, terrible implications. But the thing that we forget is that when you pendulum swing to the other end of the spectrum, it's literally the same evil, just with a different expression. You know, you can think about this throughout human history. Like, one of the examples that always pops into my head is the difference between Nazism and communism. There's really not a difference except in the way that in the ideology with which you end up executing a whole bunch of people. It's like, ultimately, you're talking about the subjugation of the human person to something, whether it is the state or whether it is the common good. Sure, the reasons may be different, but the end result is the same. Like, let's call a spade a spade. So we can say that these are two extremes, but they produce the same result. And I think we have to be careful with the people who come out and they start to find things that are wrong, because there can, and by the way, when I talk about sex and when I talk about NFP, this is something I've even noticed within myself, that I will even pendulum swing. And thankfully, there's people who will come and they will call me out and they'll be like, well, Emily, like, here's something you're missing. And I'm like, oh, right. Yes. Yes. Thank you. I'm trying to overcorrect a narrative, but you don't correct a narrative by overcorrecting. You correct a narrative by speaking the truth, even if it is in the middle and it's got nuance and it has complexity and it's difficult to understand and it takes time, and that's okay. But oftentimes the people who notice what's wrong, and again, this secular hedonism, yes, there's something very wrong. There's a reason why the alpha male red pill freaks are coming out. There's a reason why this is happening. Okay, they're reacting to something that is not okay, right? That, yes. But the thing that we have to be careful with is often the people, my husband says this all the time, that a lot of times the people who are right about what's wrong are wrong about how to fix it. It's like they're too close to the problem. It's like there's too much emotion involved, and you don't have kind of the 30,000 foot stare where you can kind of zoom out and see the big picture and accept like what's going on emotionally, but then also like, okay, this is what's going on for me, but here is the truth. Like, let's find the truth, not just do something completely different. For me personally, one of the places where I've experienced this probably most deeply, kind of this person who's right about what's wrong, but wrong about how to fix it. Back in college, I read all of Ayn Rand's novels. Now, those of you who don't know who Ayn Rand is or haven't read her novels, I'm not recommending her novels. If you have any libertarian friends, she wrote what I like to call the Libertarian Bible, which is Atlas Shrugged. You've probably heard of Atlas Shrugged. But Ayn Rand has a very colorful history, and I think her story is important. She grew up in Russia. She graduated from the University of Moscow in 1922. Now, if you're doing the math, the Bolshevik Revolution started in 1917. So she is in the midst of this communistic takeover of her country at a very impressionable age. She was Jewish. And I don't know, you know, kind of how that helped to shape her worldview. She eventually became an atheist. But I read her novels at a time when I had stopped practicing my faith. I wasn't going to the sacraments, and it was for super lazy reasons. I just decided that I didn't have time. And I told Jesus, I need to be a good student, and in order to be a good student, I don't have time for church. Literally, that's what I said. Now, those of you who were an architecture major, know architecture majors, you're like, yeah, we never saw them. They never had a social life. And I decided I also couldn't have a spiritual life. It was awful, by the way. By the end of that year, I was like, okay, so I've tried this whole like life without Jesus thing. That's awful, so I'm not doing that. Let me figure out how to reintegrate my faith with my life. And beautiful things happened as a result. But in this period where I hadn't been receiving the sacraments, had not been practicing my faith, I was reading Ayn Rand. And she really describes really well the problems with communism. If you've ever read Atlas Shrugged, you remember the description of the 21st century motor company. It is the best illustration of everything that is wrong with communism. And the tagline, and just the corrosion to the human spirit that it causes. And the tagline of the 21st century motor company for their workers was, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. So we're going to drain the people who can produce, again, is an expression of the haves and the have-nots, right? Which is a very Marxian idea. The haves are the people that we can exploit. The have-nots are the people that we need to serve. They're the victims we need to, they are elevated in this model. And it becomes very destructive and corrosive to the human spirit. And the story, the allegory illustrates it perfectly. Now, where I started to get lost was, she was so good at identifying what was wrong that I wanted to accept what she proposed for how to fix it. But the reality is that what she proposes is ultimately she developed a philosophy called objectivism, and it's a hyper-individuality where man literally exists unto himself. He exists for himself. All of the work that he does is for himself. If it benefits other people, cool, but I couldn't give a flying flip if it does. It fulfills me. This is why I do this work. So she's pendulum swinging from communism, you know, state-mandated altruism, that you sacrifice yourself for the common good. She's pendulum swinging to this hyper-individualism. And she was literally saying that selfishness is a virtue. So all of this is coming into my head at a time where I don't have the ability to parcel through this, but it just really bugged me. And I was like, I know selfishness is not a virtue, but what she's describing, you know, the people like the 21st Century Motor Company, it was about selflessness. Selflessness is good. But then, like, whoa. So I got very confused. And I remember I was in the middle of reading John Galt's speech at the end of the book, which is, I've never felt more emotionally drained after reading something. It's a 70-page monologue in this book that was just like, it's basically her laying out her objectivist ideology. And it's like, oh my gosh. I literally had to split it up over 2 days. I read half one day and half the other because it was so much. Anyway, I'm in the middle of reading this, and I was like, Emily, you're an idiot. You have a Bible and a catechism. Go pick it up. Go read it. Go figure it out. Go find the truth. Like, it's not that hard. Just go do that. So that's what I did. And I found in the Gospel of Matthew, the parable of the talents. I always mix it up. I forget if it's Matthew chapter 25, verse 27, or Matthew chapter 27, verse 25. I think it's Matthew chapter 25, verse 27. And Jesus, he in the parable of the talents, he gives to each according to their ability. Now, it was a precise inversion of the language that was used by the 21st Century Motor Company, from each according to their ability. And Jesus in this parable gives to each according to their ability, right? And at the end of the parable of the talents, what happens? Like, the one who had one talent who buried it, that talent is taken and given to the one who had five and doubled the five, right? To the one who has much, more will be given. So it was a complete inversion of this concept, and like a light bulb went off. So I'm reading in the catechism, I'm reading, you know, what they say about these different economic systems. They're talking about communism, they're talking about capitalism, and just really understanding kind of what the Catholic approach is to this. And essentially with communism, the issue that the Catholic Church has with communism is a foundational one, whereas the issue that the Catholic Church has with capitalism is a symptomatic one. So with communism, the very foundation of the economic system is rooted in, cardinal sins, deadly sins, like envy and jealousy. Whereas with capitalism, it's a symptomatic issue of greed and pride, right? So I was like, okay, so capitalism, if you govern it right, you can have a good result, but communism is like, there's not really a possibility. So anyway, the point being is Ayn Rand is pendulum swinging. She's pendulum swinging. She's pendulum swinging from state-mandated altruism to hyper-individualism. And neither one is right. Both produce a society where man is cut off from one another. And so when we look at the world today, and we see so many black and white issues, we see ourselves kind of caught in between these pendulum swings. Just remember, the truth is usually in the middle. That when we see something that we know is wrong, when we see things out in the world that we know are wrong, and then we see some Catholics coming out and showing what we think is a different way of living, we still have to run that through a filter and question it. Just because it's different, just because it's opposite, doesn't make it right. You know, if it is true that secular feminists are trying to tear down men, yeah, that's bad. But then men tearing down women is not better. Timothy Gordon. It's not better. You know, if you go back to Genesis and you look at the creation of man, and this is something that John Paul II really got into in Theology of the Body. was you had original solitude and original unity. And man does not make sense by himself. That's what we see in Genesis. You know, I like to talk about this in a somewhat joking way, that God made everything. You go through the story of Genesis, and after God made every single thing, he looks down and he sees that it is good, right? He goes through everything, and he gets to Adam, he makes Adam, and he sees that he's good. But then he looks again and he sees him, he's alone, and he goes, oh, that's not good. Oh, that's not good. He needs some help. He can't do this by himself. He needs help. He needs one who is like him. And it is in that original unity of Adam and Eve that both of them make sense. We kind of saw this a little bit in the Barbie movie, that if you have the elevation of one sex over the other, there are problems. There are problems that it's not a competition. You know, we've always heard about the battle of the sexes. Like, that was never the way it was supposed to be. And so if women are trying to tear down men, there's kind of this grasping, which you see in Genesis after the fall. God says, your desire shall be for your husband. There's this grasping that women have. That's part of our fallen nature. But for men, what does it say after that? Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall lord it over you. Male domination is a product of the fall. This competition between the sexes is a product of the fall. It was not so from the beginning. It was not the way it was intended from the beginning. And you see this, it becomes so insidious because these men, these alpha males, these red-pilled crazy people, you know, you'll see this most prominently in like these crunchy, beautiful accounts. Why? Because it's coming from women. You'll see women on Instagram, on TikTok, on Twitter saying, you need to have sex with your husband whenever he wants it. You need to homeschool your children to protect them from the world. You need to be the perfect wife and homemaker. You need to put on this facade of serenity and peace and perfection just to be different. Just a pendulum swing from secular hedonism, from man-hating feminists, to the opposite extreme, which is equally as destructive. And the truth is in the middle. And you've heard me talk about this on so many different podcast episodes, where I tell you, you know, can you say no to your spouse? Let's talk about low libido. Let's talk about homeschooling. I've talked about homeschooling, right? And school choice. That when you live in these extremes, there is no space for the uniqueness of each individual person. That is denied. That is squashed. I just got the book by Jill Duggar, Counting the Cost, and I started reading it, and it is overwhelming. I'm a chapter and a half in. It is overwhelming just how the control that these children were under. And the control that Jim Bob Duggar wielded over his family. You know, I'm just heartbroken reading this. The first documentary that they had done on them, or of them, on them, actually probably is appropriate. And Jill is describing that, you know, the filmmakers wanted to film the kids in their pajamas going to the bathroom at night because they only had two bathrooms between 16 people. You know, it's like this kind of crazy thing. And she said, she describes it as she felt unsafe. And she knew she couldn't tell her parents that because this was their mission. You know, this desire to be different, to be set apart, to live the faith in a good and beautiful and wonderful way. Yeah. Yeah. But this is why Jesus said to be in the world, but not of the world, right? Or was it Jesus? Somebody said it. I think it was Jesus. Be in the world, but not of the world. We have to be in the world. We are of a time and place. We were created precisely at the moment we were created for a reason. And it's not about doing all of the right things so that we stay protected, right? If you watch Shiny Happy People, the umbrellas of protection, if you just do all of the right things, if you stay underneath these umbrellas, nothing bad can happen to you. And then we see that obviously that's not the case. But this whole idea, this whole pendulum swing, you know, sure, you're right about what's wrong, but you're so wrong about how to fix it that women just need to blindly obey their husbands, that they just need to spread their legs and be sperm receptacles. Like, women in both situations, both women and men are machines. See, that's the thing that I was thinking about is that if a woman literally exists in this alpha male world, she literally exists so that he has an appropriate orifice to deposit his sperm, that she produces his children, that she keeps a nice home. She's a machine. She's not a person. She's not even a servant. She's not a slave. She's beneath that. She's a machine. She's not human. She does not get to be human. And that is absolute, that is a slap in the face to the God who is love, who made us for love. You cannot be loved if you are a machine. I mean, we here in America, in the English language, we only have one word, love. Like, in other languages, there's different words to describe different types of love. We can say, I love my washing machine and my dishwasher, and we also say, I love my husband, right? Like, these are two very different types of love. One is the love of use, and one is a self-giving love and a receiving love, right? There is an exchange of persons in the love I feel for my husband. There's just, I'm just using you when it comes to my dishwasher, right? Which is fine. It's a machine. That's what it's for. But the thing is, because the sexes are understood in light of one another, that original unity means that man and woman do not make total sense isolated from one another. Now, this doesn't mean that everybody needs to get married. There has to be a sexual union, but that, you know, you can look at all of the saints, like the ones who were priests, the ones who were popes. They typically had really good friends of the opposite sex. St. Teresa of Avila and St. John of the Cross, Pope John Paul II and Mother Teresa. You see these great saint friends, St. Clare and St. Francis of Assisi, right? You see these great saint friends of opposite sexes throughout the centuries. So that we make sense, we complement one another. We add something to one another. And if you reduce a woman to a machine, you're doing the same thing to a man. Because what do these alpha males say? Oh, you're a man because your wife has sex with you whenever you want. You provide a paycheck and, I don't know, like, get some yard work done. Like, you pass around. Like, you're a machine too. You're also not human. If you reduce women to being machines, to being some human, subhuman, you do the same thing to men. And so this pendulum swing that we're caught in, I want to go back and I want to read what Jesus said to Catherine of Siena, because it's not about, the point here is not, hey guys, y'all need to listen to us women, you know, it's not that. Again, it's not about putting this battle between us, but why does Christ say that he wants people to listen to Catherine? You must know that in these days, pride has grown monstrously among men, and chiefly among those who are learned and think they understand everything. How many of you have met one of these alpha males or seen them on Twitter, and they act like they know absolutely everything? That is pride. That is pride. That is the original sin. That's a sin that Lucifer committed. That's why he was cast out of heaven. That is the original sin. It was for this reason that at another period I sent out simple men who had no human learning but were filled by me with divine wisdom and let them preach. It's about humbling those who believe they know everything. This is why Satan hates the Blessed Mother so much. Why Satan hates the Blessed Mother more than he hates God. Why? Because she's the woman who's going to crush his head, and she's a creature. She's a creature. She's like, in Satan's mind, as somebody who is super puffed up about himself, he knows God is above him. For God to defeat him, okay, that makes sense. for a woman to defeat him, that is a huge blow to his ego. This is why exorcists will tell you that a Hail Mary and a rosary sends demons freaking out. They hate it. They hate being defeated by a woman. God uses humility to supplant pride. That's the key here. When you see pride anywhere, even if it is coming from a beautiful Instagram page where the images are just delightful and you're looking at this and you're feeling inspired and you want your home to look like this and you want your family to look like this, just keep your eyes peeled for that pride. Do they talk like they know everything? Or is there a willingness to admit that, hey, this works for me and I love to share it with you, but I also recognize that this may not be the right choice for everyone. There's room here to discover what you were made for, who you were made to be, and it's going to look different from me. Have a discerning eye when you look at this stuff on social media. I know it has a huge impact on our brains, and my gosh, I'm not looking forward to the day where all of the studies come out and we have just like this stack of evidence at how this has just completely ravaged our brains. This constant comparing and all these types of things, it's awful. I want to finish with what Jesus said. If men will humbly receive the teachings I send them through the weaker sex, I will show them great mercy. But if they despise these women, they shall fall into even worse confusion and even greater agony. You know, these trad bros who use Catherine of Siena to decry NFP. I seriously just want to know, did they read this? Maybe they didn't read this because it's a biography written by a woman about a woman. So maybe they think that, you know, it doesn't have anything of value for them. I don't know. I'm being a little cynical here. My point is that when you're looking for somebody who is going to show you, who is trying to show you a holy way to live, they will be marked by humility. You will feel peace about what they're sharing. You will not feel anxiety. You will not feel this. Maybe there'll be some comparison. Maybe it's something that's like, maybe there's a highlight for you of like, oh yeah, hello. There's something, there's information for you to be curious about. But you will sense humility. You will sense a willingness and an openness to listen to different viewpoints, not necessarily to change their mind, but because as a human being, you recognize that you're not God, therefore you don't know everything. It's impossible for your tiny brain to hit all to fit all of the world's knowledge. That there is a value to understanding and sharing the experiences of both sexes when it comes to anything. I'll just try to wrap it up with this and just kind of bring it home and bring it a little bit more practical. If you're a stay-at-home mom, maybe you've experienced this, or even if you're a working mom, you've probably experienced this even more. The feeling of disparity between the mental load that you share with your husband, right? I've certainly felt this. It can really put a lot of tension between spouses if you feel like the load is not evenly shared, even if it's for very understandable reasons. It's kind of hard to parcel that out. The reality is that men and women were created differently. And it doesn't mean that one is better than the other. When I'm doing things, when I am able to manage my own emotional world well, and granted, it's taken me a long time to acquire those tools, but when I'm able to manage my own emotional world well, I'm able to recognize that on those days where at the end of the day, I am spent and I am taxed to oblivion, and my husband has the audacity to talk about his stressful day that he had with adults who take responsibility for their emotions for the most part. Haha. Not always. I can pause and I can say, hey, you know what? It's not about whose hard was harder. It's not about whose hard was worse. They were different hards. And because we were made different, they're probably both equally hard for us. my husband's hard may not be the same hard for me. I used to work in an environment that was very high stress, and I loved it. I thrived in it. When things were crazy, they were nuts. And I had, I felt a little crazy. But honestly, at the end of the day, I was like, yeah, I managed all that. Heck yes. Like, it was a rush. It was great. And now, you know, it's more about emotional management of children that I'm very emotionally attached to, right? They are mine. I am their mother. Like, it's a totally different story. When I was working in the workforce, I'm not emotionally attached to these people. So different stress. Different stress. And it doesn't have to be a competition. There's space for both of our experiences. Both of our experiences matter. And we can recognize it, like, hey, you know what? Right now, we're not exactly in the headspace where we can listen to each other's crappy days and provide reassurance. Maybe we need a good night's sleep and that can happen tomorrow. But I just want to remember that it's not me against my husband. It's not about whose hard was harder. We're on the same team. We both had hard days. Now, what can we do to reconnect and to remember that we make more sense together than we do apart? Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it brightened your day and that you laughed as much as you learned. If you're enjoying the show and want more people to learn about what I share here, please leave a review and even share with a friend. I hope you'll join me again soon. Until then.